grew up in upstate New York. I grew up in Rochester, New York. I was a high school basketball player. Some would say star, but I was a high school basketball player. I grew up in a very tight-knit black community, right? You know, I grew up in that community where you didn't really know white folks. You might have seen white folks at school as your teachers, but your neighborhood, your community, the people that you interacted with were pretty much black folk who cared for me, who loved on me, who took care of me. I was in a community of folks who cared about me. And I went off to college, and my freshman year, I started to realize that I was the only women's basketball player in the class with all the male basketball players. And I was like, you know, I wonder what's going on. I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I went to the other women on the basketball team, and I asked them, well, what classes are you in? Oh, you know, biology, geometry. I mean, they were, those classes sound interesting. Myself, I was taking indoor recreation for a semester, and I took outdoor recreation for a semester. I took first aid for a full semester. There's only so many ways you can do a tourniquet. There's only so many ways you can put a Band-Aid on. And so I realized that I was in like the jock track, and I didn't know what to do. So I'm trying to figure this thing out. And so I go to the advising office, and they're like, yeah, you know, you're from the inner city. You went to an inner city school. You're an inner city kid. This is your major. And at that moment, I was so pissed off. I'm 19 years old. I've done everything they told me to do to be successful. I've done my best. I've got good grades. I got a basketball scholarship. And here I am without the ability to decide what I want to be in life after everything that I've done to get here. And at that very moment, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I wanted to become. I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher. But what I knew was I was pissed off. And I was pissed off because it wasn't just one person telling me I couldn't be what I wanted to be. It was a structure in place that nobody would let me around. Nobody would see that I was more than that. Nobody could see that I was more than an athlete. And that for me has just been something that has burned in me, for the last 21 years of how I was treated, even though I was trying to do my best. And luckily I transferred and went to the University of Pittsburgh student, and I was a student athlete. And so for me, that was really the turning point in my life, was realizing, oh, this is racism. But I'd known racism, but this is systematic racism. Mm-hmm. This is the denying of me as a person and my dreams and what I want in my life because of where I came from, and never seeing my ability because of where I came from, and because of the color of my skin, and because of the schools I went to, and because of who my parents were, and because of my class, and all of those things being denied. And so that was a big turning point in my life that really got me into these ideas of justice and equity, and what does all that mean as a 21, 22-year-old person. And then the other thing that I would say is that it's something that I've heard social justice lawyer, social movement lawyer, Derek Parnell say, this idea of managing inequality. That's what we do in education. We want to manage the inequality. So we have positions, we have directors, we have all these things that manage the inequality. We all know we have the inequality, but we're not in the business of eradicating. We're not in the business of removing the inequality. We're in the business of just managing the inequality. So in a state like Georgia, they have an award that you get called Beating the Odds. They actually give you an award if you are a school that can beat the odds. That's white supremacy. So you're gonna sit here and tell me, here are all the things that I know that get into your way. And some of the odds that they say is class, low income, areas where there's a lot of folks who come in and out, race. So you have all these things that you know are barriers. And instead of removing the barriers, you rather measure me against the barriers. Mm. And so what we're concerned about doing in education is truly managing inequality. We don't want to eradicate. We don't want to remove it. We want to manage it. And then they want to give us positions to manage the inequality. So they want to make black folks, we want you to be the director of equity and inclusion. Yep. Okay, yep. The director of managing white folks hurting black children. Now, I'm not saying that those positions are not necessary, and I'm not saying those positions are useless, but what I'm saying is that is how white supremacy shows up, because it's the idea that, well, we gave you a director of equity. What more do y'all want? Mm. Everybody should be good now because we're managing the inequality.
Abolition of police or abolition of prisons. But what does it mean for school? Are we talking about abolishing school?
Yeah. When you say the word, you know, abolitionist or abolish, you know, people get a knee-jerk reaction and they get all up in their feelings. And I understand that. But if we want to understand, it's not a radical thing to want to be seen as fully human. It's not a radical thing to want to say this, the way y'all set this up isn't fair. The way you set it up, some people get to play, some people don't get to play. The way you set it up, not only do we not get to play, there are now structures and institutions and conditions that make sure that I can't play and my children's children can't play. So what we're asking for is to start over. And that shouldn't be something so radical. But what makes abolition radical is because now you're saying, oh, yeah, and we want to take away your toys, too. We want a playing field that says the things that you have, the privileges that you have, you no longer have those privileges because you didn't earn them. And since you didn't earn them, you need to go ahead and give them up. And so when we think about abolition, yes, it is a big ask, it is a big push, but it is a push for everybody's humanity. It is not just a push for black and brown folks' humanity, it is a push for everybody's humanity. And so when we think about education and its link to abolition, it has so much to do with the ideas that folks like Angela Davis have given us, folks like Ruth Wilson Gilmore has given us, David Stalbaugh, Erica Minor, those folks who have done that particular type of work. And what they have said, let me not forget Charlene Carruthers out of Chicago. And what they have said is that we not only want to abolish these buildings. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to abolish the conditions that create those buildings. We're trying to abolish, eradicate the conditions that make it possible to treat children like this in schools. Yes. That make it possible to suspend and to lock our babies up. The conditions that make it possible to standardize tests to a point where I don't even know what grade I'm in anymore. The conditions that make it possible that we're not hiring black and brown teachers. And so we're not just trying to say we want new school buildings or we want, and we're also not trying to say, hey, throw money at this and then we're going to keep the same old, same old. So abolitionist teaching is so much about eradicating and not trying to reform, not trying to reimagine. I tell people all the time, would you want to reimagine slavery? I don't want to reimagine slavery. You can get it. I don't want to reimagine nothing. And so we got to get out this idea. And so what abolition is trying to say is that we know that we're having this moment of saying the words abolition and it's becoming popularized because of what the work has been done by so many civil rights icons and leaders and everyday people that put their lives and their hearts on the line. Mm-hmm. And now we're at a moment to say abolition. Mm-hmm. But we're also at a moment where we're done with gradual, incremental reforms. Because what we know so much about reforms is to appease white folks. For the white liberals to feel like we're doing good work. We got a reform in. So while you're doing good work and while you're doing these little gradual reforms, I'm dying. Mm-hmm. I'm being shot. I'm being spirit murdered. And so we're not talking anymore about the reforms. We are talking about trying to abolish a system that is oppressive, and we want to abolish the conditions that perpetuate that oppression to black and brown folks. Mm-hmm. So when I think about abolitionist teaching, I'm thinking about, of course, not only defunding the police, but no police in schools, counselors in schools, therapists in schools, healers in schools. Mm-hmm. We're talking about building curriculum that we're doing away with standards. We're doing away with Eurocentric standards. community standards, community education, community-based. That's the curriculum. We're doing away with the idea that schools cannot have kids play. We're doing away with standardized testing. We're doing away where our babies don't learn their history and their culture and the beauty of who they are, right? And those things that we're asking is human things. It's things for humanity. It's things to be seen and to see yourself as beautiful. That's what abolitionist teaching is about. And so it may seem like a big lift, but it's a lift for humanity, for all of us.